Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 7, knowledge of the absolute, text number 30. Sari-bhuta-di-daivam-am Sari-yagya-chaye-vidu Priyana-kali-pichamam Tevidor-yukta-chetasa Sa-adi-bhuta. And the governing principle of the material manifestation. Adidaivam, governing all the demigods. Mam, me. Sa-adi-jagnyam, and governing all sacrifices. Cha, also. Yea, those who. Vidu, no. Prayana, of death. Kale, at the time. Api, even. Cha, and. Mam, me. Te, they. Vidu, no. Yukta chetasa, their minds engaged in me. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation, of the demigods and of all methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. Purport. Persons acting in Krishna consciousness are never deviated from the path of entirely understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the transcendental association of Krishna consciousness, one can understand how the Supreme Lord is the governing principle of the material manifestation and even the demigods. Gradually, by such transcendental association, one becomes convinced of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the time of death, such a Krishna conscious person can never forget Krishna. Naturally, he is thus promoted to the planet of the Supreme Lord, Goloka Vrindavan. The seventh chapter particularly explains how one can become a fully Krishna-conscious person. The beginning of Krishna consciousness is the association of persons who are in Krishna-conscious, who are Krishna-conscious. Such association is spiritual and puts one directly in touch with the Supreme Lord. And by His grace, one can understand Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the same time, one can really understand the constitutional position of the living entity and how the living entity forgets Krishna and becomes entangled in material activities. By gradual development of Krishna consciousness and good association, the living entity can understand that due to forgetfulness of Krishna, he has become conditioned by the laws of material nature. He can also understand that this human form of life is an opportunity to regain Krishna consciousness and that it should be fully utilized to obtain the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord. Many subjects have been discussed in this chapter. The man in distress, the inquisitive man, the man in want of material necessities, knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of Paramatma, liberation from birth, death, and diseases, and worship of the Supreme Lord. However, he who is actually elevating Krishna consciousness does not care for the different processes. He simply directly engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and thereby factually attains his constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Lord Krishna. In such a situation, he takes pleasure in hearing and glorifying the Supreme Lord in pure devotional service. He is convinced by his doing so, all his objectives will be fulfilled. This determined faith is called Dhrita Vrata and is the beginning of Bhakti Yoga or transcendental loving service. That is the verdict of all scriptures. The seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is the substance of that conviction. This end of Bhaktivedanta purports to the seventh chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of knowledge of the Absolute. So the verse again. Sari Bhuta Didaiva Mam Sari Yagya Yagyam Tiryevidu Priyana Kali Pichamam Tevidor Yukta Chaita Saha Those in full consciousness of me, knowing me to the Supreme Lord to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods and of all methods of sacrifice, and understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. As mentioned here, our objective in dealing with the people in general is simply give them the opportunity to hear something about Krishna. Because our philosophy is self-evident. When Lord Chaitanya was speaking to the Mayavadi philosophies, he mentioned that Sankaracharya's explanation of the Vedanta Sutra is just like a cloud covering the sun. The Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, and the Vedanta Sutra are just like the sun, and they're self-evident. No one has to try to prove the fact that the sun has heat and light. If one has eyes, one can see and experience the sun. Similarly, if one is receptive, if one hears submissively from the right source with the right attitude, then the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, because it's Buddha Yoga, it's based on pure knowledge, pure intelligence, becomes self-evident. So, if people simply hear with the right attitude from the right source, then they'll be able to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here these steps are mentioned. It is not that we have to create something new. The process is already there. It's just a question of how much we follow it. Give people the opportunity to associate with devotees, and when the devotees explain about Krishna, then one is directly in touch with the Supreme Lord. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Deno sminita dehe komaram yovanam jara tata dahantara praptir diryas tatra namuyati. As the embodied soul continually passes in a body, going from boyhood to youth to old age, so the soul will enter into another body at the time of death. The self-realized souls, they're not bewildered by all these changes. In other words, it's self-evident. Everyone has experienced that their body is changing, and everyone has experienced that they're not changing. If they were changing, they wouldn't have any experience of other bodies. They would have gotten lost in the change. Every moment we'd have a new person. Bhakti Marco would become James, and then Peter, and Alexander, and maybe Sally, from one moment to the next. As everybody would produce another person. But it doesn't happen. The same person is there, despite all the changes of body. So it's self-evident that we're all eternal. Now, someone may object, but what is the objection based upon? All they can say is that I'm different. So if you're different, we don't have to talk to you because I was talking to a different person 5 minutes ago. And not only that, but 5 minutes from now you won't be here anyhow, so why should I try and convince you? Because you'll cease to exist in 5 minutes. Along with your body. Now, if you want to claim your body is permanent, it's exactly the same body as when you were in the womb of your mother, well, I'd say that from the laws of physics, it's impossible. You wouldn't fit. But if people want to insist like that, then we should try to find someone who has some intelligence. Because obviously, anyone who believes that everything's exactly the same all the time isn't conscious of anything. And anyone who believes that they're different all the time is not even worthy to be talked to because they're going to disappear anyhow. What's the sense of convincing someone who doesn't exist anymore? According to their estimation. So in the associate, this is Krishna's first instruction in Bhagavad Gita. And now the next question arises, that if we're actually spiritual beings and that we're misidentifying ourselves with gross and subtle material energy, then why are we doing that? What's causing that? There must be something as a cause behind that. That the material energy in which we're situated must be the cause of our delusion or illusion. Now, who's causing everyone to be put into illusion? I can guarantee you it's not me. And if anyone wants to declare that they're the ones who are putting everyone to illusion, well, be kind enough to take us out of illusion. So we can see, just it's self-evident, that although I may be eternal, but right now I'm eternally in illusion. And there is something causing that illusion. And the most obvious thing is my own intelligence, false ego, body, mind, etc. must have something to do with it. Because sometimes I'm less in illusion, and sometimes I'm more in illusion. So the state of my intelligence determines how much illusion I'm in or how much illusion I'm not in. So I'm being governed, I'm being influenced at least by my intelligence. Unless I get spiritual intelligence, and then my illusion of misidentifying myself with this body doesn't take place anymore. So the question, who's giving this spiritual intelligence that we're all eternal, but the body's changing? Well, Krishna says he's the one who's speaking it. He also said he's moving the planets in their orbits. Now, anyone with a little perception will actually observe that these big planets are moving their orbits. That they're changing. The sun's rising at a certain time. The sun's setting at a certain time. And it's in a very exacting sequence. Now, we ourselves can't even throw up a ball of fire and have it circumambulate in this room. With all our intelligence, no scientist can create anything equal to a sun. If they claim it came about by accident, then accident has more intelligence than their intelligence. And if it was came about by accident, then they should know how the accident came about. If they're going to declare it's an accident, because accidents also have causes. It may be an accident when two cars hit each other. They call it an accident. But the police don't come, and then they ask what happened. They say, don't worry about it, it was just an accident. No, there was a cause of the accident. So there's this fire they know is going around this universe, and they say it's an accident. Now, tell us, if you can make that statement, then on what basis are you making the statement that it was an accident? Can you produce a similar accident? If you can't, then how do you know it was an accident? So these are all self-evident, that whenever we see something intelligently designed, we understand there is an intelligent designer. Nothing that we find intelligently designed came about by accident. For instance, this building has some intelligence behind it, the plumbing, the electricity, the water, whatever else, but no sane person will declare it came about by accident. And the electricians come, the plumbers come, the architects come, and say, we designed it, and our response is, we don't believe in you. You don't understand, it was all an accident, you had nothing to do with it. No, actually, we designed it, we did everything, we constructed it, No, you're wrong. It was just an accident. So who has met the architect here who made this building? Who has met the electricians? Who has met the plumbers? Who have met any of these people? But we assume they exist. And if someone comes along and says, you're wrong, this building especially was made by accident, we won't believe them. We'll think you're crazy. Similarly, the big universe, which is infinitely more complicated, and even our own bodies, which no one can manufacture except in horror movies like Frankenstein. Even this body, we can't even manufacture one cell in the body. And yet we're claiming it's all by accident. But in one cell, there's more activities going on. It's a more complicated arrangement than a big city like New York. Is a more complicated arrangement for production of energy, for distribution of the energy, for the transportation of nutrients, for the elimination of unwanted the combust or exhaust from the different digestive processes that are going on. In one cell is more complicated than an entire city like New York. And there are millions and trillions of cells in the body, and they're at every second they're being formed, and so many thousands are being formed and destroyed. And yet they claim it's an accident, but they can't even create one cell. So if accident is more powerful than they are, then they're useless. Just wait for an accident to come, and we'll all become rich. We'll all become intelligent, famous, and healthy, whatever, just by accident. So why are they working so hard to make results in the material world if everything was an accident? So they don't believe in an accident. That's why they go to universities to get their PhD degree. That's why they do all these experiments to figure out how to so-called improve things or to make results. They themselves are trying to control things to get some result, but the result is already there. But they claim it's an accident. And if they can create one automobile or one computer, then they want everyone to glorify them. That look at this wonderful thing they created. But the wonderful things that are even created, they say, oh, those are accidents. And if we say, well, actually, your computer was just an accident, they'll say, no, I created it. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I created everything. So someone created it. It wasn't the scientist. It wasn't my brother. And Krishna is claiming it. And he's giving knowledge. And if you want to find out if Krishna is correct or not, you can study the process of being, that we're eternal souls in illusion, and how that illusion works. Dayatova shampoom sam sangaste shupajayate. That if we start looking around trying to contemplate controlling and enjoying the material nature, then lust will arise, and then greed, then anger, then delusion, and then forgetfulness, and then we lose our intelligence and we declare everything's an accident. So even the mechanism by which we're put into illusion is to explain in detail the three modes of nature, the process of being put into illusion, how lust, anger, and greed are part of that illusion. It's all elaborately explained in Bhagavad Gita, and even more elaborately explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's self-evident. That if you want to have a clear mind, you can't hanker and lament. And if you're hankering and lamenting, you can't see things properly, because your mind is not clear, and your intelligence is not clear. If you're hankering and lamenting about something in this material world, which is temporary, we're just wasting our time, rather than trying to find out who we actually are. So if we're eternal, and we're spending all our time and energy trying to survive, it makes no sense, because the body can't survive and we can't die. So to waste all our time and energy trying to survive when we're not going to die is obviously illusion. And to try to conserve something that's going to die, no matter what we do, it's going to disappear at every moment, is also an illusion. So in other words, we're wasting our time. On the other hand, if there is a person, which logically there is, from which everything comes, then maybe we should be interested in finding out who he is. And he says, if you know me, then you won't be influenced by illusion anymore. Because I'm so attractive, you won't become attracted to anything in the material world, and therefore lust, anger, and greed will go away, and you'll be situated in your eternal relationship with me. Anyhow, this is just some thoughts. Any questions, comments?
In the verse says, ones who truly know me. So what is that? How do we really know Krishna and not just know of Krishna or know of his qualities?
Well, the first thing is hearing. It's like Krishna's book, Bhagavad Gita. So he said we're eternal. So we know Krishna knows something. So we know Krishna a little bit. And as we advance, as we hear, then we can understand that Krishna, he knows quite a lot. So we get to know Krishna. At least we know he's intelligent. He has some good things to say. And then gradually as we chant Hare Krishna, we can feel Krishna's presence. And then we get to feel, experience Krishna a little bit more. And then, of course, as that goes on, then more experience is there. We find out if we're associated with Krishna, we're not influenced so much by hankering lamentation anymore. And then gradually we can experience the happiness of being in Krishna consciousness. And then we actually experience something called love, which means love for Krishna and ultimately love for everyone. So that experience will be there too. And then eventually we'll become mad after Krishna. So it's a gradual process of getting to know Krishna. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna, I need the translation. Mene zanima, če še vedno to drži, da vsi zapadnjaki se morajo roditi v Indiji, če hočejo potem priti k Krišni.
Thank you.
Do people have to have a birth in India to return back to Krishna? What's that? Where did that idea came from? Where's India?
Včasih se je tako govorilo pred.
What then?
It used to be said that she heard.
Who said from who?
Mislim, da sem to pred kakšnimi 25 leti slišala na lekciji, saj drugače.
25 years ago she heard it on a lecture.
Okay. I hope that devotee is still in the movement. Now Krishna says to go back to Godhead, janma karma chame divyam evam yove te tatvataha tyakspadeham punarjanma naitimam eti sorjana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my birth and activities does not take birth again in the mature world but attains my transcendental abode. So you can find out about Krishna anywhere. If you told Brahma, my dear Brahma, you're unfortunate because you're in Brahma Loka, you can never return back to Godhead. Maybe next time you can take birth in India. I don't think he would be agreeable. Nor does Krishna. No, the qualification is to know Krishna in truth, to become fully Krishna conscious, and that can be done anywhere by following the process. Anything else? Thank you very much, Grandharaj, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Ki Jai.